Do you have any, Chris? Microphone. All right, Tommy and Tommy!
You nervous? You nervous like I am?
Yeah, just I just realized that I forgot to put deodorant on. I don't normally smell, but I need Sean to get in here and give me a whiff. I've lost the lost my sense of smell and taste. What's going on? Oh, I saw the sign flashing there on I-90. Vaccinated or not, put on your mask. Ugh.
You hate being safe, huh?
Yeah, I like being lied to. All right, let's see. Seattle schools are going back. That's right, kids, but not so fast. Don't think you're going back 5 days a week for 6 or 7 hours of great indoctrination. No, that's not happening. They're going to go back. They were going to go back in January. Then they're going to put it off. They're going to go back, but it's going to be not quite what people thought. And now some parents are like, this ain't worth it. I don't think these were ain't. Although ain't is in the dictionary, Tom. Why are they saying it's not worth it?
Okay, well, let's not overstate this.
Let me remind you. It is talk radio, and as Sean will tell you, you can never overstate enough and then put a sound effect in. Go ahead.
That's true.
Thank you, Sean.
It's the first day back for a lot of Seattle school students, Seattle Public School students. However, the interesting thing is, so I think that's really what we ought to be focusing on, but it is interesting that apparently tens of thousands of parents have decided that it isn't worth sending their kids back for all sorts of reasons. Mm-hmm. Some are for health reasons,
yes,
but some are for, as Seattle Times puts it, logistical reasons. It's too much of a hassle to rearrange whatever you've managed to do over the last 6 months for the last 3 months of school to rearrange your schedule, especially since these are not full day schooling events.
Right.
What they've done is they send half the kids in the morning and half the kids in the afternoon for 2-hour and 45-minute sessions. Mm-hmm. So some schools, now the only reason I said kind of put it in check, it's like 87% of this one particular school, the students are going back. 87%. That means 13% didn't. And so what's surprising is that we've heard so much, you know, in the news and just in sort of general discussion, kids are clamoring to be back. The system, the way they have it, is not worth it.
Some are deeply depressed. Some are thinking about suicide.
Fair enough.
Some are really having some mental problems. Some are being physically and mentally abused. Others are having trouble having regular meals being provided for them. Go ahead.
Well, you are prepped for that. Yes. So the assumption, I think, was that it would be an even higher, you know, demand to get back into school, that maybe not 100%, but, you know, like 95%. And at least in this one particular school they profile, it's 87% of the students are back, which still means that, yeah, there are tens of thousands of students who aren't coming back are going back for various reasons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway,
the good news is that the best shakeout of this whole thing, other than the fact that the average kid will be, I think they said, 5 to 15% below what they could possibly earn in a lifetime. That's one study. It's going to be hard to prove that one out in 40 years from now. But the other one is that there are now 34 bills in 15 states across the United States slowly making their way through to be able to have vouchers and programs for more choices for school. So that is the good news. Certain states that are sort of not really into the idea of having choice, they say probably nothing will really move there. But others that have kind of been a little bit on the edge will actually start to even provide not even more choices, and then others will start to move forward as well. So the best thing is that parents will be able to have their money follow the child as opposed to it going somewhere into a government system and that you really don't have any choice. So maybe that'll be the best thing that comes out of COVID, is it a thing called freedom.
Well, you are taking advantage of the fact that this is a talk show. You are exaggerating a bit, but still,
Tom,
it'll be interesting to see what the fallout is.
What did I exaggerate? Yeah.
This notion of freedom. The fact
explain
that
to me.
Insist...
Explain to me. Hold on 1 second. I'll ask you a question, then you can respond. You ready?
Why?
How am I free? Where can I send my kid? What school can I send my kid to?
The Seattle Public, well, your kids aren't in Seattle Public School System, but the Seattle Public School System, the public school system.
Yeah.
I know you like to call them government schools. It's one of the cute things on the right. People are now calling public schools government schools.
What do you call it?
But they've always been called public schools.
Why?
They're public schools, and they are free, not in the notion that it doesn't cost anybody anything, but that society provides for them through our taxes for that kind of freedom. So anyway, now, I do
no,
think
no, 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 go back, because this has always been a boogaboo for us, or bugaboo.
Yes.
Tell me why, tell me what freedom I have. So if I live in a zip code, 9807 whatever, and the school down the street is failing, and I don't have any money to send my kid to a private school, and I'm stuck in a crappy school in Rainier Valley, explain to me how I have freedom. Because again, the public school is going to provide, the government school is going to provide this education or not education, since 24% and fourth graders actually are reading, doing math above level in Seattle school district. So explain to me the freedom that that mom has to send her kids somewhere else.
The freedom she has is to go to her public school, and ideally they're not failing. Remember, John, you seem to think that with vouchers, charter schools are some sort of panacea. Charter schools, on average, do worse than public schools.
Not
more
true.
Of them fail
not
than than public schools.
Not true.
So that's no kind of panacea. Everything, the grass is always greener.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, I'm not saying that public schools are all perfect, but the thing is that you try to provide as best you can that perfection. You move toward that.
What freedom?
And maybe it means more funding, but remember, public schools, unlike private schools, and I went to, because my family is Catholic, I went to parochial schools, but my dad taught in a public school system, so I have a taste of both systems.
Yeah.
And remember, what public schools have to do is they have to educate everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the private schools, they can have their own rules and regulations about who they let in and who they don't.
Yeah. And what freedom does the mom have?
That kind of freedom that gives you the freedom that, say, a private school has is because it can exclude others. A lot of kids that went to Catholic schools that were behavioral problems, they ended up getting kicked out of Catholic schools, and then they had to go to the public schools, and the public schools had to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
The students with disabilities are educated there. The special ed kids, they're all these things that make for tough educational situations.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're coming from a socioeconomic, hard hit neighborhood, it is tough. And it's even within the private, even within the public school system, it's tough because you have richer districts. If you live in North Seattle, your school probably has more resources in the hands of the family than the South.
Explain to me what freedom the mother has.
Just freedom to go to, I mean, her kids can go to those schools.
What school?
Where does she live? I mean, whatever
public
school
system. She's in a failing
system.
Public school.
She's not, well, okay, and I say then let's not make it failing. You've got to fix this school then.
Okay.
Improve the school.
Okay, right. That means she has no choice.
Public school, you don't have the choice. It's true. You can't go to a school that isn't your, if you're not in the district.
So when you don't have choice, what do you have?
You
have restrictions, Tom.
Well, no, I mean, you have no choice in whether your kid's going to get educated or not. Your kid has to go to school.
That's it.
From first grade to 12th grade.
Got it.
It's a school. It's a law.
You proved my point. Big teacher shortage.
No, I didn't. All I did was say that, yes, you have to, your kid, even if your kid is rich and can go to a private school and gets the best education, he still has no freedom because he still has to go to school from the age of 5 to 17, I guess.
And the mom has no freedom. All right.
Freedoms.
The Fauci has decided that, I don't know if I believe him or not, because he does like to move the goalposts, as he's proven numerous times. The U.S. won't require.
I'm not going to be quiet.
Oh, do we actually have him saying it? Chris, does he say it? Does he have a mask on when he's saying it? That's what I need to know. Does he or not?
No, he was maskless.
Maskless? Uh-oh.
I doubt that the federal government will be the main mover of a vaccine passport concept.
Hmm.
They may be involved in making sure things are done fairly and
equitably,
but I doubt if the federal government is going to be the leading element of that.
Well, if not the government, then whose responsibility is it to do something like that?
Well, that's the point. I do believe that there will be individual entities that will do that. There may be theaters that say you don't get in unless you have proof of vaccination. There may be colleges or other educational institutions that do that. I'm not saying they should or that they would, but I'm saying you could foresee how an independent entity might say, well, we can't be dealing with you unless we know you're vaccinated, but it's not going to be mandated from the federal government.
Yeah, they were asked about this like a week ago, and Jen said, yeah, we won't, it's not going to be us, it's going to be someone else, but we will help out if we need to. I predict, and Governor Florida said, no, we're not doing that here. You'll see other states as well, and then eventually they'll all cave because people want to go back to quote-unquote normal, which means they won't ask you to have passports. They won't ask you to carry around something. News came out today. The FBI said, hey, look out. Don't get these fake cards saying you've been vaccinated. That's against the law. Don't try to carry something like that around. I would assume through capitalism, people will always vote for more rather than less restriction, more freedom rather than less, and these passports won't come forward.
So I can anticipate, for instance, we've got the Freedom Caucus here in this state. I didn't realize when Chris assigned the story that this is something that had been broached months ago and didn't even get a hearing. But one of their suggestions is that that schools would not be allowed to require vaccinations. And that is an issue where I think there'll be some pushback. Right now, we already require kids to get, you know, their shots for diphtheria and whatever the DPT and that kind of stuff. So I think at that point, I think that is something, and I don't know if you consider that a government decision or not, but that seems to be something that society has already accepted. Now, what I'm thinking about is the travel business. I can imagine that an airline might make a decision that they think would behoove them, just like you are there. You can set up how you want to run the interior of your airplane.
Yeah.
If you offer snacks or you don't, or you offer alcohol or not, that they might say, well, some people, we will be the ones that will guarantee that if you're sitting next to somebody, right next to somebody, we can guarantee you that both of you are vaccinated. I can see them making a business decision or not, depending on what their business model is.
Yeah.
And I think that it's Fauci's smart to keep his medical advice and the federal government out of it and let business kind of decide that. And I can imagine in this transition that there'll be some businesses that are more conservative than others.
Yeah.
We talked to a bunch of restaurants who said, yeah, I know I can open up to 50%, but I don't, it's not worth it to me. Right now we've got a good arrangement. Now, obviously in 3 months or whatever, when more people are vaccinated or it's not considered as a big a public health issue, he'll open up 100% or she'll open up 100%. Right now we're just in that kind of awkward transitional
state. But I don't think they're not opening at 100% because one, they're not allowed. And two, it's also financially doesn't work for them. It's not that they're fear of somebody. If you don't, if you had a street with six restaurants, right? And three of them say, come on in. And the other three are like, where's your passport? You'd be like, you know what? I'm going over here. So then what happens is the person, it's just going to get down to, do you have people that are walking around completely scared and carrying their little passport with them? And then you have other people that are like, no, I'm done. I got the vaccine. I don't need to carry that. I don't need to carry the proof of it. Business will make the determinations based upon two things. One, lawsuits, which is going to be really hard to prove that I got it at your restaurant. You'll have a hard time proving that. But lawyers will try to make some money on it. And the second is, what do people want? The businesses will provide what the people want. That's always the case. And then you will have those that want the passport or whatever, and you'll have the others.
Right.
And the majority, because you want to serve the majority of people will be like, yeah, I'm not into that. I'm not going to get the thing. I don't want it. I'm going to fly or I'm going to travel and get hotels and stuff like that.
I don't know if that's a majority or not. But for instance, I would like to go to Ireland or France this year.
Uh-huh.
But Ireland and France are not letting people in to their country as of yet. And if all of a sudden France and Ireland says, you know, you can come into our country, but you need to have proof of vaccination, I would say, good, fine, I'm happy. I will go to your country. Now, there'll be other people that say, screw you, France, or screw you, Ireland.
Yeah.
I'm not coming in if you don't want me.
Yeah.
And that's a balance, and it's a business decision on both of us, our sides.
Yeah, so Ireland also has the restrictions. Is it all of Europe, Tom?
That's a good question. So Europe, I just heard UK just lightened up. UK had some of the most restrictive measures until recently. And then I heard both Italy and France, you know, went, you know, locked down more because things were getting out of hand. I'm just in, I have relatives in Ireland. We're kind of communicating back and forth whether this is something that's going to fly or not this summer. I was originally going to go last summer, and they said, yeah, things are pretty, you know, sketchy right now. So we'll sort of have to see. But I think most of Europe isn't as free and easy about Americans or anybody coming to their country unless they've been cleared in some way.
Boris Johnson ditches the plans to show vaccine passports going into pubs and restaurants. Yeah, ditch the plan to make customers show a vaccine passport when they go to a pub. In a huge boost for the industry, the COVID status certification scheme will only apply to mass gatherings and indoor events like football matches. That's indoor and nightclubs. Yep. Oh, nightclubs. Number of pilot events, that are out there. All right, so that's good.
Okay, so, yeah. So there are restrictions. And I would be willing to do that if that's what was required.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
You travel. Mm-hmm. You fly a lot more than I do, and I know that you fly. You say that the people that are willing to fly are not. They don't act concerned.
No. Yeah. They're looking at it.
I guess those that are wouldn't go.
Yeah, they're looking at it like, okay, I don't have comorbidity. I'm this and that, and I'm going to go. And chances of getting it this that, and the majority of people are, you know, just going on with their life. The restrictions that they put on them are you have to wear the mask. I wonder if they lifted it off of SeaTac and they said you don't have to wear the mask. I wonder how many people. That'd be an interesting experiment. If someone told Joe Biden to read the teleprompter and say that you don't have to wear the mask anymore, and Joe got it out and got all the words out and people understood him, I wonder how many people at SeaTac would continue to wear a mask.
You mean the workers or the travelers?
Let's just go travelers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, and by the way, one last thing on the teachers thing.
Yeah.
The pandemic has created a teacher's shortfall. They're not, sort of like with the roadies, there are not many substitutes in the pipeline because they realize this is a shaky time to be a teacher. So we may have a teacher shortage for this next 6-9 months.
Ooh, yeah. But did you watch? I'm assuming you're Gonzaga crazy, right?
Are
you
Gonzaga crazy? Yes, I'm okay. So nervous.
Tom's nervous.
I
all right, like a
barely stand.
Like a long tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
Yes,
where you
exactly.
Are?
Okay, remember, I'm Mr. Doom and Gloom. I always anticipate the worst, and that happens more
don't
often
pull it
than
out
not
again.
When it comes
don't
to
pull
sports.
Another half court shot off the backboard.
Exactly. What more do you need?
What else you want? All right, Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us on a Monday. What do you got? Sounds like the beginning of The Odd Couple. All right, Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Keel Mortgage is there for all of your mortgage needs. It's still historically low, but they won't be there forever. Slowly starting to move up, and people are going, oh my gosh, I better get a house. Better get that loan. Lock it in now. Get in touch with the good people at Keel Mortgage. Tom, we are celebrating. Today is a very, very big day here at Kind Radio.
Is that right? Why? Gonzaga?
No. Is it Aaron?
Who? Me?
Aaron. Is it Aaron being on the show, hosting, doing the thing?
Doing the thing. Hmm?
Doing what he's doing? Is that what it is?
Oh.
No, it's not.
But our new slogan, when we start running in, can you believe it, 2 years.
Is Chris Martin gets vaccinated.
Tomorrow.
I
was all excited, but then I found out it's the Johnson & Johnson. Should I be not get it and wait and try and get the two-doser?
Wait, then let's also make a big deal about Aaron being
wrong!
Here. No. Big deal, Aaron's here. Yeah, he doesn't want the Johnson & Johnson. He wants. It comes with a free Band-Aid from Johnson & Johnson.
Oh, nice.
Aaron, are you all vaxxed up?
I'm not vaccinated.
All right, okay.
No, I don't qualify quite yet. April 15th. April 15th.
Yeah, you know what? I'll qualify you right now. There, you're qualified.
Appreciate
all right,
that.
There you go. All right.
See, Aaron is another somebody who follows the rules, John. I know you don't believe there are any of us that I'm a unicorn, but there are a lot of us on staff
that play by the rules. He's not a complete rule follower.
That's true. There's some truth to that. On the air, I am.
On the air. His persona is such.
Tom, let's talk about why you are so nervous. The Bulldogs are 4-point favorites. It's a game like this that people are describing as the best basketball game in the history of basketball.
He had the ball in his hands in the paint. That was a couple days. Short, got it back, ties him at 3. Gonzaga has time to do something. Sox for the win.
Well, it doesn't play well on the radio. Hold on.
No.
These guys are not, obviously not doing radio play-by-play. Oh, no! Oh, wow! The back and forth at any time either team could have won. There used to be a thing, a little plastic thing, like a round thing of dynamite, and you used to turn the top on as a bomb, and it would go around and around, and finally, and you're holding it in your hand, and bing, it goes off, you lose. This is an example. These teams so evenly matched. UCLA, which didn't have a very good season, postseason, but once they started playing, it's like it all came together. And then it was like the final. They go into overtime, and then how far away? I didn't see the final shot. Was he actually at half court?
It was initially Mark Few, the coach of Gonzaga, called it a 50-footer. I've heard since then it was really a 40-footer. But so just to set this up, UCLA is down by two, and their superstar, this Juzang, who had scored 29 points, he shot a shot, you know, from about 5 feet away. He missed the shot from UCLA, but he got his own rebound and put it in with 3.5 seconds left. The game is now tied. Gonzaga doesn't call a timeout. They immediately throw it in. Jalen Suggs gets it. He just dribbles halfway down the court, and once he crosses the court line, the half-court line, he just heaves it up, and it banks in.
Oh, that doesn't count, then.
It's unbelievable.
The backboard game with a 12-minute. Yeah, the backboard shot.
It was a backboard. That's what you say. He didn't call backboard, but it went in, and then he immediately, he said he always wanted to be able to hit a game-winning shot, especially this is the game to get you into the national championship, that he jumps up on, like, the press table and cheers the crowd. He's like, D-Wade did it, like Kobe Bryant and all this.
Oh, good.
But here's my concern, and they started out Gonzaga as, I think, 5.5-point favorites. It's now down to 4 points. And what I'm afraid of is that Gonzaga, and they played tremendously. They've beaten everybody by double digits throughout the entire tournament until this last game. I'm afraid that there's the exhilaration that, you know, that they got and spent, the energy they spent to win that game, might allow them to come out a little flat.
Ooh.
And I don't know. I mean, that's my nerves talking.
Yeah.
And Baylor's been great.
I think that always the best part of whenever a team, and Gonzaga has always been respected. It's always made it, you know, somewhere in the bracket.
It's always been a solid contender,
Yeah, but it does so much for the school when it comes to recruiting. You're right that you see a great school, certainly when you're like, and come to Spokane. You're like, what? Right?
Why?
Why? Yeah. And it's a difficult school, right? It's a Catholic school.
Yeah,
it's got a lot of things against it. But then if you're a kid sitting there, it just does so much more for the school to be able to finally make it and then to get there. And then if they win, they beat Baylor, then it's like, wow, it's just so much nicer to be able to recruit. And then the team grows. But the biggest problem still seems to be, Tom, a la Duke, one and done. The fact that you can go in, do 1 year now, and just be finished. Teams just use the college for the 1 year, and then you're out again. And then the school's always sort of just almost treading water.
Yeah, that hasn't been the case as much with Gonzaga as it has been for Kentucky and Duke and all. But the thing is, it'll be more spectacular if they do win tonight. But it's also more, to me, being a sports fan is all about how hard is the loss going to be. The fact that they are not only playing for the national championship, my heart broke, I think it was 3 years ago when they played the national championship against North Carolina and lost. I mean, they were the second, you know, best team in the country, but they still lost. But this time, they are undefeated. This would be the first time since 1976, the Indiana Bobby Knights Indiana Club, that has gone through the entire season. They're going to, you know, be like 40-0 or whatever.
Yeah.
That is so if they can do this, but the more you put on this historically, the more pressure or the more disappointment we're all going to feel if indeed they don't do it. And everyone says they're the best team, and there's only one team that they're pretty sure could beat them, you know, on any given night, and that's Baylor. And so they're going to have to beat UCLA in a thriller, and then the second best team in the country back to back. This is why I love and hate being a sports fan. It just drags me.
If UCLA had won and UCLA Baylor, did you care about who wins that one?
Yes, because that's the other thing is I have so much pride for Pac-12. The Huskies are terrible these last 2 years. But I was rooting for UCLA and USC. I love the fact Pac-12 is considered garbage and the Big Ten is considered great. The Big Ten, they lost. They were like 9-1 in their games in the Pac-10 in the tournaments were 10-1. It's like we had three teams in the final in the Sweet 16, and we had one team in the final, you know, Final Four. And it's like, so I was rooting for them. So yes, if UCLA had beaten Gonzaga, I'd still watch the game and I'd still be rooting for him for Pac-12 and West Coast prominence.
Yeah, but it's nothing anything like anything you could find, any hat, any hook you can hand a hat on. Like, and I've always been a big fan of blue and yellow. I think it's a great.
That's right. But Gonzaga, I went to Seattle U. You know, Seattle U, we came in second with Elgin Baylor. You know, well, that's the closest we ever got. We lost to Kentucky in the national championship in the 50s, I think it was. And so Gonzaga is a lot like, you know, Seattle U and Gonzaga. We share faculty members sometimes. I mean, it's like, it's a big deal. So it's just like having my own alma mater in the national championship.
Duke was nowhere near it, and I wanted them to do well. So, because, as you know, Tom.
I think the most talented person is here.
Who's talking? You know who that is? That's Coach K.
I was going to say, is that Coach K?
It's the guy I'm going to introduce, and it's John Curley. I wish I could coach him. I don't know if he can hit a shot or whatever. All that I know is he would play his butt off. My good friend, John Curley.
Wow. I have never heard that
and
idea.
I wrote him yesterday. I texted him yesterday. I said, hey, good luck tonight. I don't normally follow college basketball.
This is the first year that Duke and Kentucky, for the first time in like a quarter of a century, didn't even make it to the tournament.
I know. It's so funny. When I did an auction with them last year, I'm off to the side. I don't follow any basketball stuff. I said, hey, Rod, give me three good jokes. And Ryan's like, okay, because Ryan knows all the stuff. And Ryan gives me this joke, and apparently, and I didn't know why it was funny, right? And I deliver it. Oh, my God. Coach K, I looked over at him, and if he could have daggers shooting out of his eyes.
Oh, wow.
I went back over, and Rye goes, God, Dad, why'd you? Oh, my God, Dad, I can't believe you did that one. I said, well, you gave me the three jokes. I didn't know. Why is that funny? He goes, oh, my God, you don't know what that. Oh, my God, I can't believe you did that one. And then I got somebody wrote me, goes, whoa, you took Coach K down. I was like, yeah, that's what I do. Oh my God! Yep. Anyway, when you want to write to him, if he was in it, it's always fun because I know.
Yeah,
I said to Ryan, "Hey Ryan, what should I write to? What should I send to Coach K?"
Hey, you know, I've got a quick question for you. Do you think that if he was your coach, that you would be a good pupil of his? Does he have you right, or is he misreading you?
As a basketball player?
Well, as anything. I mean, I don't know what else he could coach you in.
I don't know, because it's just an auctioneering, because he sits right down front and watches me run around. And he's a great guy. He's like hypnotic. People come into the room, and I tell the story, so he's... I'll tell you a story about him later on. It's fine.
Yeah,
you gotta get the traffic. So we're standing up there. There's 700 people. We're in this big room, and he goes like this. He goes... All right, let's raise some money. Let's get going here. Okay, who's going to give a million? Who's giving a million? Who's giving a million? Jimmy, look at me. Jimmy, look at me. Jimmy. Jimmy, don't look away. Look right here. Give me $1 million. And the guy goes, I'll give 500,000, coach. No, screw that. Give him $1 million. Everybody knows the stock went from 18 to 81. We all know that. Everybody know that? Everybody knows that. So give a million. He browbeat like four people into $1 million. And then at one point I go, okay, now anybody care to give 1,000? He goes, we're not doing 1,000. Come on, if you're such a cheap ass, you can't give 2,500. We're not getting 1,000. Get out of here, Curly. $1,000, please. I was like, oh my God. But I love being on, because he is, it's like, the guy's a god, right? I mean, most winningest coach in college basketball, coaches the Olympics. Tom, if you ever had a chance to sit down and talk to him about coaching the Olympics and those players and the stories he tells, oh, my God.
Is he a storyteller, though? He looks like he's so prim and proper.
People gathering around. Oh, my God. And he does one of these things. When someone new sits down, he then goes, okay, so what I was explaining, I'm like, oh, no, don't go back. So the story this morning, welcome back to the Tom and Curley Show. Tom's sitting right there. Getting ready. Big game. And how about Tracy Taylor wanting to meet Coach K. I just wrote.
Yeah, that's great.
And he wrote, just going to see if he'll do something. He probably won't. My last insult to him. Tom, I saw the story. I thought, oh, you'll love this. The guy's name is John One. He's a graffiti artist. Came up in the 80s in L.A., vandalizing people's public and personal property. And then he ended up kind of breaking out, and then he gets picked up. He's moving in Paris now. He has an exhibit. Is it this exhibit in South Korea? Is it in South
Korea? Yes, this happened in South Korea, yes.
I watched a beat piece on him. I love his art. I think his colors are great. I love what he does. I hate the fact that he was vandalizing and breaking the law. But here he is now, and then his piece is hanging up. He's got this big display there in South Korea, and there's some paintbrushes that are over to the side, and you could watch the video of people also being inspired by the work of John One.
That's right. So the reason this painting is of note, it's a typical kind of, you know, it's a graffiti painting, but he did it as part of a live performance. So he painted it. He painted it in front of an audience. That's what it is. And so on the display now, they have the painting, and then they have, as a kind of recognition of the kind of, you know, the materials of his art, they had some paint cans and paint brushes.
Right.
So a young couple comes up and they're admiring it. And like, there's a lot of interactive art in contemporary art these days. And so they said, oh, this is great. And so they went and they painted it for a while. They just took the paintbrushes and they added to their painting.
By the way, neither one of them have already. Did you see what they did? It wasn't even that good. The piece is huge. It's 240 centimeters by 700 centimeters. See, the value of it is $500,000. They went and put like black paint, like in a couple of spots. They didn't even. What they added was horrible.
But they thought it was just participatory art.
Yeah.
They didn't realize it did anything wrong. They left the museum. They're wandering around the mall. It wasn't like, because some people go in and they try to trash a particular artwork. It wasn't like that at all. They were contacted and said, oh, we just thought it was part of the art installation. The artist is trying to figure out what the artist wants to have done. Uh-huh. Is there a way to remove it? Would he leave it? Marcel Duchamp had this famous painting in glass called The Bride and Her Bachelors Even. And when he shipped it from France to New York, it broke in the case. Uh-huh. He decided he loves this idea of art being things that happen, you know, at random. And so he kept the cracked glass and all, and that's now part of the artwork. I wonder if this guy might do it. This might become more famous for being the one that was defaced unintentionally than the original artwork.
It's dripping with irony, because here it is, private property, and someone comes along and vandalizes it. So he gets a little taste of his own medicine.
Perfect.
All right. Tracy Taylor, look at some traffic for us on a Monday already. Yep.